JC Corcoran Podcast.
Now, having somewhat successfully established my press credentials, and because you and I have at least one thing in common, which is that all of us deal with language all the time, I thought it might be nice today for me to come to you with some of my language complaints. Certainly not to blame them on you, although, of course, you are implicated. And not that you can help it. I mean, the problem is really with the people you cover, the politicians, the celebrities, and the lawyers. And although their level of insincerity is astonishing, it's still kind of fun to hear them talk. In particular, it's fun to listen to Washington talk. Whenever the issue of term limits comes up, I always tell people the only term limits I'm interested in would be to limit some of the terms used by politicians. They speak, of course, with great caution, because they must take care not to actually say anything. Proof of this, according to their own words, is that they don't actually say things, they indicate them. As I indicated yesterday, and as the president indicated to me, but sometimes they don't indicate, they suggest. Let me suggest that as I indicated yesterday, I haven't determined that yet. See, they don't decide, they determine. If it's a really serious matter, they make a judgment. I haven't made a judgment on that yet. When the hearings are concluded, I will make a judgment, or I might make an assessment. I'm not sure. I haven't determined that yet. But when I do, I will advise you. They don't tell, they advise. I advised him that I had made a judgment. Thus far, he hasn't responded. They don't answer, they respond. He hasn't responded to my initiative. An initiative is an idea that isn't going anywhere. When he responds to my initiative, I will review his response, take a position, and make a recommendation. And so, at long last, after each has responded to the other's initiatives, and each has reviewed the other's responses, and everyone has taken a position, made a judgment, and offered a recommendation, now they have to do something. But that would be much too direct. So instead, they address the problem. We're addressing the problem, and we'll soon be proceeding. That's a big activity here in Washington. Proceeding. They're always proceeding or moving forward. A lot of that goes on. Senator, have you solved that problem? Well, we're moving forward on that. And when they're not moving forward, they're moving something else forward, such as the process. We have to move the process forward so we can implement the provisions of the initiative in order to meet these challenges. No one has problems anymore. Challenges. That's why we need people who can make the tough decisions. Tough decisions like how much soft money can I expect to collect in exchange for my core values?
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
It's cold outside, baby. It is cold. We are warm inside. How you doing, kids? Thursday, November 4th, 2021 edition of the J.C. Corcoran Podcast here at jconline.com. I'm going to tell you something about the weather, and then we got some really, really big news for Sopranos fans here. But anyhow, the colder weather brings out the high fashion. Now, if you turn on television news 30 years ago, everybody's wearing business suits, including the women. And then things started to erode a little bit, and especially depending on where you are, because if you're watching television in Phoenix or in Southern California or Florida, whatever the case may be, those warm weather climates, you know, the expectation is a little bit different, because you turn on the news and it's like, you want to see somebody who looks like you. And if you live in Duluth, Minnesota, and you're watching TV there, you don't expect a female newscaster to show up on your local news with some sort of sleeveless outfit, okay? It just doesn't work. But you go to Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and turn on the television there, then you have that Latin influence, too, down there in southern Florida, and that's, you know, that's where the skin really starts to fly. And I love flying skin. I'm not sure what the hell sort of metaphor that was there, but I'll work on it. So anyhow, the point I'm trying to make here is that you know, the colder weather is here, and you see the fashions change, even in a place like St. Louis. And on Fox 2 in the morning, you got this traffic reporter by the name of Molly Rose. Well, first of all, you got Claire Lede, who I don't think is very smart or very experienced and very anything. I think she's learning on the job. Margie Ellisor has been there forever. She's rock solid, the whole thing. Got that new weather forecaster, got some sort of name I can't pronounce. And you know, from a distance, she shows up on camera pretty good. The closer they get in on her, the more divorced she looks. And it's one of the worst boob jobs I think I've ever seen in my life. Boobs are way too big for her frame, for her body. And it's just, you know, it couldn't be more obvious. Let's put it that way. Now, I don't know. Maybe she looks better than she did before. I don't know what she looked like before she got the boob job. So, I don't know. Maybe it's an improvement. I don't know. But the one I'm talking about here is Molly Rose. Molly Rose is somebody I think Fox 2 should be paying more attention to. Right now, they have her doing traffic reports. But the thing about it is her wardrobe. There's a couple of people, including a couple on Fox 2, where the wardrobe has been an issue since the day they arrived. And that's men, too. That's men, too. But you notice it more with women because, you know, guys get to wear a boring suit and tie, but women, you know, have the ability to do lots of different things with their wardrobe. So this Molly Rose, I don't know what's going on there, because for the amount of money you get paid to do that job at a TV station, you probably don't have that much disposable income. And yet, she shows up on the set every day just dressed magnificently. And she's wearing thigh-high boots today. And let me just tell you something. This is great. Plus, she's very good at what she does. And I've talked to her a couple of times. She's a very nice person. So just making observations. You know, people think that all people like me do in situations like this is tell you about things they don't like. You know, complain about everything. Oh, I'm outraged by this, whatever. Every once in a while, I do like to point out the fact that it's probably more fun to talk about stuff that you do like, but then you run the risk of people attacking you because they think you're fawning in some way, or that you want something out of these people, or somehow you're kissing somebody's ass or something like that. No, not really. I mean, all it is I just talk about what I see, and this is what I've been seeing, and so there. All right, now, I told you a couple of moments ago that I had some pretty big news, especially if you're a Sopranos fan. And let me just check this. What is the date here? Yeah, it was dated yesterday. So, you know, I got up this morning and I saw this. Now, you have this movie, The Many Saints of Newark, that opened about a month ago. And it was interesting because I gave it a very, very good review. I think I gave it like 4 out of 5 quirks. And I really enjoyed the movie. I thought it was very, very well done. If you're unfamiliar with it, it's the Sopranos sequel. It was made by David Chase. And the reviews were mixed. And I don't understand why they were mixed, because I think it was a really, really well-made movie. Very entertaining. But, you know, people walked in going, okay, so it's a prequel. And so we know Tony Soprano's not in it. We know that, you know, all of our favorite characters are not in it. So let's watch the movie. Then you watch the movie and people were like, well, you know, none of the major characters were in it. It's like, well, you knew going in. It's a fucking prequel. And the other thing is, they got some actors who look exactly like what the major characters in The Sopranos would have looked like in the late 1960s, which is when this movie takes place. So the news I heard is that they're already talking about either another prequel movie or possibly a prequel series. So somebody liked what they saw. So David Chase is out there really, you know, pushing this stuff because, you know, I'm not sure the reviews were what they were anticipating. And so what do? You get out there and you start promoting the crap out of what you did. And hopefully more people will watch it, more people will download it, whatever the case may be. So David Chase is doing a podcast with some guy the other day, and he says, here's the quote, "I had no idea it would cause that much of an uproar," talking about the final episode of The Sopranos. And here's where it gets good. Chase is now revealing his thoughts on the restaurant scene, but he's also admitting he didn't initially plan to end the six-season series that way. And here's the quote. "I had a scene in which Tony comes back from a meeting in New York in his car. At the beginning of every show, he came from New York into New Jersey, and that last scene could be him coming from New Jersey back into New York for a meeting at which he's going to be killed." End quote. Chase said about 2 years before the scene was filmed, he drove by a restaurant in Bloomfield, New Jersey that inspired him. He said it was kind of a shack that served breakfast, and he thought, Tony should get it in a place like that. Why? I don't know, but Tony should get it in a place like that. The series didn't show the character being killed, and Chase was surprised by how many people reacted. He had that quote again. "It was sort of incredible to me, but I had no idea it would be that much of an uproar," Chase said. And was it annoying? What was annoying was how many people wanted to see Tony killed. That bothered me. The show's fans wanted to know that Tony was killed. They wanted to see him go face down in Linguini, you know? And I just thought, God, you watched this guy for 7 years, and I know he's a criminal, but don't tell me you don't love him in some way. Don't tell me you're not on his side in some way. And now you want to see him killed? You want justice done? You're a criminal after watching this shit for 7 years, and yeah, that bothered me. The words of David Chase. What the hell is going on in Green Bay? All right, I like watching Aaron Rodgers. It was painful to watch last year because he wasn't himself, and then he comes out and has a one terrible game at the beginning of the season and has been lights out since. I like Danica Patrick. I think she's absolutely the cutest thing on earth, and I like that yoga thing and how muscular and everything she is. You know, I like women to be toned. I don't like muscles like these women in those special beauty pageants they have where they're built like guys because they're so muscular and they don't even look like women anymore. I don't enjoy that. If you do, fine, that's your business, but I really find it horrifying. But Danica Patrick, just, you know, there's a lot of energy packed in there, and we've had her on the air, and I really, really liked her. So I sort of liked the idea of, you know, Aaron Rodgers up there in Green Bay and Danica Patrick from Rockton, Illinois, up by Rockford, and I like that idea. Oh, after a couple of years, boom, that's gone. Oh, that's too bad. I really thought that was sort of a nice couple. Then comes Olivia Munn, and I like her too. And I'm like, this guy has great taste in women. But then that one went away too. And now you're starting to think to yourself, well, now, wait a minute. Maybe there is a problem there with Aaron Rodgers. And then along comes Shailene Woodley, who I think was only 16 or 17 years old when I saw her for the very first time in that George Clooney movie called The Descendants, which, by the way, is a really, really cool movie. It is sometimes a little difficult to watch, but that's okay, too. There's nothing wrong with that. And Shailene Woodley played his daughter. Like I said, she had a stick figure at the time. Well, Shailene grew up, and she somehow ended up in the crosshairs of Aaron Rodgers, and they're going to get married. But as I said, I've always enjoyed watching him play. But now the obvious question is, what just happened up there in Green Bay? How has Aaron Rodgers managed to play the entire first half of the season without being vaccinated? The NFL's been telling us all along, oh, you know, we've got this great protocol thing here, and everybody's vaccinated, and so much so that if, you know, in the case of a couple of handful of players, they've said, I'm not getting vaccinated. These are big sports stories because guys are losing their jobs because they won't get the vaccine, and so they can't play because it's part of the NFL protocol. But while all that's going on, Aaron Rodgers goes out and catches COVID and can't play in what was going to be a tremendous matchup, Patrick Mahomes against Aaron Rodgers. So now he can't do that. He can't play. He's got COVID. So not only do you lose a really, really attractive matchup in the NFL coming up later this week, but the whole thing raises more questions because it's like, well, how did this happen? How did he get away with this? Was he not vaccinated? And the league knew? The team knew? Who knew? And heaven forbid, players on the teams that he's been playing against the last couple of weeks. Some of those guys get COVID, because you can still get it if you're vaccinated. It's still possible. Breakthrough cases. I think the Packers ought to have, they should be sanctioned in some way. They got to take away a draft pick, or they got to give him an extra, you know, mark in the loss column or something. This isn't right. And now it makes me think less of Aaron Rodgers. And that bothers me, because there's somebody I really, really enjoyed. And now that I know he's an anti-vaxxer, you know, I'm not going to enjoy watching him as much. Thanks for nothing. And just for the sake of discussion, here is the current contract of Aaron Rodgers. He signed a four-year, $134 million contract with the Packers, including a $57 million signing bonus. $57 million just to sign. $98 million of the $134 million is guaranteed. Average salary, $33 million a year. In 2021, Aaron Rodgers earned a base salary of $1,100,000, signing bonus of $14 million, and a roster bonus of $6 million, while carrying a cap hit of $27,073,568 and a dead cap value of $53,920. That starts to get into a little bit of technicality there. But it has to do with the NFL rules that talk about money earned versus money spent. I listened to the old general manager of the Rams, Charlie Army, try to describe it once, and I ended up more confused than ever. Speaking of how much things cost now versus, I don't know, how much they used to cost. This has been floating around on the internet. You've probably seen it on the off chance you have not. I thought I'd throw this at you. We were talking about the Cuban Missile Crisis the other day, and in fact, talking about John F. Kennedy. In 1962, the average cost of living, here you go, new house, $12,500 for a new house. Average income, $5,556 a year. A new car costs about $2,900. Average rent, $110 a month. $110. If you wanted to go to Harvard, it cost you $1,500 a year. Movie tickets were a dollar. Gas was 27 cents a gallon. Postage stamp was 4 cents. When it was time to eat, fresh ground hamburger, 40 cents a pound. Eggs, 32 cents a dozen. Bacon, 69 cents a pound. Coffee, 85 cents a pound. Milk, a dollar a gallon. My daughter just turned 12, and trying to explain the economy to her is really, really hard. When I tell her, yeah, I used to get Cokes for a dime. So now they're like $2. If you, in a hotel, they could be like $3 or $4. We're like, well, yeah. But the average income was only about $5,000 a year. But see, this, you know, when you're 12, you don't have any concept of any of this kind of stuff. You like hearing the stories about how cheap things were back then, like gasoline, 27 cents a gallon. She can't get her head around that. But it's like, yeah, but compared to everything else, and this is why I'm not an economics teacher, I'm barely qualified to be a father. People might think that the states where Trump won the election in 2020 would be safe from conspiracies, but you would be wrong. Other Republicans in some states are tired of watching the nonsense being dragged out. The election is over. Joe Biden won the election. Most people know that, even if they don't say it publicly. Now billboards popping up in Texas that say that very thing, and they're being paid for by conservatives who are openly disgusted by the efforts of some to call the election into question. See, the Republican Party is great because they are solid and together and in lockstep, arm in arm. Democrats are all over the road. It's like trying to herd cats. Good luck. And there's more going on in this one paragraph story that I can keep track of. Here we go. On Monday night, college football Twitter became enthralled by a story that at first seemed too outrageous to be true, but as facts and important people involved in the story came forward, it only got stranger. A Texas coach's ex-stripper girlfriend's monkey bit a kid on Halloween. Let me give that to you one more time. A Texas coach's ex-stripper girlfriend's monkey bit a kid on Halloween. At that point, I just stopped laughing. I stopped reading. Then I was interrupted, and I have no way of tracking the rest of this story down. But the headline is so great, it's almost better that way. Another big story this morning you're going to be hearing about, Gabby Giffords. Remember her? Legislator down there in Arizona gets shot in the head by some crazed idiot a couple of years ago. She has just filed a huge federal lawsuit against the NRA, accusing it of using shell companies to illegally funnel $35 million in campaign contributions to major Republican campaigns like Trump, Hawley, and Ron Johnson. Wow. Watch this space. And we haven't done one of these in a while now, so I thought we would dig back into the archives. And we were talking about Danica Patrick, and I know there's a lot of people who think she's bogus. I got a friend in Cincinnati who just despises her, and anytime there's any sort of negative story about her, he slaps it up on Facebook. It's really, really funny. I'm not exactly sure what his problem is, but he just thinks that somehow she is infected racing. He may be one of those people who doesn't think a girl belongs out there, but he, whatever she does, it raises his ire so fast and so quickly and so intensely. He just, you know, he's always on her about something. And I used to work up in Rockford, Illinois, which is a hop, skip, and a jump. I mean, literally within walking distance of where she grew up. That was at radio station. I think I wrote about it in the first book. I once worked at a radio station. You can think I'm making this up. I swear to you, I'm not. I can produce witnesses that will tell you this, that it was an AM-FM station. And the FM got out there okay. The AM station, if you were on the east side of the broadcast tower, pretend you're in East St. Louis and you're looking west towards the arch. Okay, so about a distance like that. From the east side of the broadcast tower, a couple of miles out, you could see the tower on the horizon and not be able to pick up the radio station on your car radio. I swear to you, it's true. That's how low power this thing was. And it could only like broadcast to the west because they wouldn't let it go east because then it would interfere with stations coming out of Chicago and the western suburbs and everything like that. So you could actually see the tower, not hear the radio station. But anyhow, right there in that region, right there in that area, that's where she grew up. And in 2004, we had a chance to talk to Danica Patrick. It's our JC Celebrity A-List interview of the day. Parking lot of the radio. Hi, Danica.
Every time in the parking lot. Are you kidding me? You know what? I tried to do donuts in my high school parking lot before I left high school because I left at 16 to go to England. And I tried to do donuts. And you want to know the truth?
Yeah.
There was ice and I didn't know how to do a donut. Somebody asked me to do a burnout one time. I had a Mustang Cobra and it was a manual. And so they wanted me to do a burnout on the street and I couldn't do a burnout. I didn't know that you're supposed to go like flat on the power and then drop the clutch. I thought you just did it really quickly at the same time, like foot down and release the clutch. You know what? It's not. Floor it. Let the revs come way up. Womp, 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 womp. And then drop the clutch.
Well, let that be a lesson to all you children out there who are learning how to do this.
Wow. Aren't I a good influence? Yeah, and about my book, anyway, the really inspirational Crossing the Line.
Yeah. Danica Patrick, IndyCar racer here, Crossing the Line, which is out now and going to be on Dave's show tonight. Let's start with that name, Danica, because as far as we can tell, we think it's like a combination of Daniel and Erica. What's the derivation of that name?
Mm-hmm. It's Slavic. Oh. I'm going to sound all smart to you right now.
Okay.
It's Slavic. It means morning star.
Mm.
And I believe it's from, well, Slavic sounds like Yugoslavia to me, but it's something like the Czech Republic. I don't know. I think it's maybe something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I got smart for a little while on you.
We will accept that.
Except for the end when I'm like Slavic, Yugoslavia.
We'll accept that as an explanation. I got to ask you, when you wake up on the morning after the Indianapolis 500 or one of the races that you perform in, what sort of shape are you in? You know, you always talk to professional athletes, football players, even in some cases baseball players, if there's a collision or something like that. And for a long time, there's always been an argument about whether or not people who race cars are athletes. What sort of condition is your body in the morning after?
Well, I'd recommend people to try it. I think it's although it's very hard to sort of try out IndyCar racing. So it's the state that I wake up in the next morning has to do with how well I do. You know, after the Indy 500 last year, it wasn't so well. But
physically, are you beat up after the race?
You know, usually you're a little dehydrated the next day. We sweat so much, and it's hard to replenish as much as we need in the time frame that we have. So, and to be honest, I've actually gotten sick after the race from drinking water.
Danica, you drive for David Letterman's team. How involved
And Bobby Rahal.
And Bobby Rahal, yes.
Uh-huh. Who was? I know y'all want to say just David Letterman, but you know,
Bobby was a great driver himself for a long time.
Absolutely.
What's David like as a boss, and how involved is he in you actually driving that car?
Honestly, we don't obviously see him as much as we see Bobby. I mean, David is a very famous guy with a well-known show, and he has many things to do. But we do see him at the Indy 500, and it's not the easiest thing for him to come to the racetrack and cruise around and stand in the pits. I mean, people are constantly watching him, taking photos, but I know he watches at home all the time, and he's a good boss. He doesn't try and tell us how to what changes to make on the race car to make it go well, and nor do we tell him what jokes to say. So.
Good arrangement.
Danica, I'm sure that this is something you deal with a lot in the book Crossing the Line, but about leaving home, not just your home, but your country at age 16 and how that was for you. And then I'm just curious if you passed your driver's test, the written and the practical in the first try.
Well, you know what? If I did my driving test in England, I might not have passed. I've heard of, you know, there have been Formula One drivers in the past who haven't passed their test. So, I went over to England at 16, and it was tough, but you know, driving test I passed in the States.
Please take this in the spirit that it's intended. But how much does your mega babe status get in the way of, you know, keeping your eye on the ball and keeping other people's eye on the ball? Focusing on what you're doing for a living and racing the cars as opposed to just walking around looking.
Well, I'm just like totally blushing and just flattered that you say I'm a mega babe. I haven't heard that one before. So,
then you're not listening.
Tell
very
me,
carefully.
Seriously, girls, it's not hard to sort of hear people say that you're a mega babe, is it? I mean,
well,
it's
I've
just
never
not.
Experienced it, but I'm sure
I haven't either till today. But I'm gonna say you guys are mega babes, and you're gonna tell me that it's not distracting at all. You're gonna go, wow, thanks, and you might actually hold your head a little higher. So
yeah, but you know what I mean.
Fit out the door. It's all your fault.
You're trying to get people to concentrate on your racing career, and people are just going like that, you know, when they're around you.
But then, see, they can't see me inside the car, so they're forced to watch me turn around and around.
Yeah, she's got the helmet on,
They watch that and they go, "See, that's the lure. That's what's hot. That's what's hot is that you can get strapped into your car and be this whatever mega babe or whatever, and then go drive your butt off and drive with the boys and do well and do something that some other chicks haven't done. And
is, it, I is think there that, one
and
is
be
there,
confident while doing it. I think that's hot.
Danica, thanks for spending a little time with us here in St. Louis.
Not a problem. Thank you.
I don't know. She seems like nothing but trouble, but I like her anyhow. Danica Patrick, right there. Hope you enjoyed that from the archives. And that puts a lid on another J.C. Corcoran podcast here at jconline.com for Thursday, the 4th of November, 2021. We publish every weekday at about 7 a.m., Monday through Friday. It's absolutely free. We archive all of the podcasts here and on various other platforms. You can always email me at jc@jconline.com. Facebook is the showgram with J.C. Corcoran. Have a great day. If I'm back tomorrow morning, we'll kick off the weekend here at jconline.com. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.